Hello, my friends, and welcome to the next episode of Just One More Thing. My name is Norgie. Thank you for joining me today, and I'm delighted to have back as a guest for, what, the third time now?
Third time, baby.
I think it is the third time. My good friend and comedic foil.
That's me.
Chavez.
Hey.
Thanks for coming back. You came to see Avenue Q.
Mm-hmm.
Was it the last weekend that you came? No, it was the second weekend? I can't remember.
Last Saturday.
Okay, so it was the last weekend. That's how mushy my brain is right now. Everything just runs together. But yeah, we closed out the show last weekend. You came, and I always appreciate when you come to see the shows. So thank you for
no problem
supporting the show and the theater, and
love it.
It was a fun show.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely not for.
Not for kids.
Yeah, definitely not for kids, and not for some older folks either.
True,
but
true,
it was delightful. So, how you been, man?
I've been all right. I've been better, but I've been all right.
I've been all right. What, you've been better?
Yeah, I've been better.
What's
mortality comes to mind, and you just appreciate more.
Like your own mortality?
Yeah, that, others, you know what I'm saying? But it's I don't know.
Not questioning, but thinking about your own mortality or the mortality of others?
It's just that I try to as much do as I can. As far as hanging out with people, as far as inviting people over to do things. I think that it's not just mine, it's everybody's.
Sure.
So I want to do as much as I can with what I can, because it's short. You know, you realize at a certain age that life is short and you want to have fun while you're doing it.
Right.
I'm not saying that, don't worry, I'm not saying that mine is short. I'm not saying that yours is short. I'm just saying that we need to take advantage of the phone calls and the texts and
the visits.
The visits,
yeah.
And hang out with people. And so this week I've really been able to reflect on that.
Is there a particular reason why?
Yeah, and it's about a week's worth of stuff. So if you don't mind, why don't we start at Saturday?
Okay, yeah, let's go. Fire away, man.
Because Friday I saw the show.
Right.
And it was fabulous. It was funny. It was, I knew some things were coming up. But it was funny. It was what it was supposed to be. And, I went home, I laughed some more. I stopped by my guy Court, saw him. And then I came home. I ate and watched TV, and that was Friday.
Okay.
Saturday I had some stuff that I had to do, which was fun. And then I've been going to the City League basketball tournament, not even tournaments, the City League. But it's something to do.
Where do they have those at?
At the Boys and Girls Club.
Okay.
It's $2. It's, you see some people, you know, from school. It's really cool.
Sure.
Let's get into after that. After that, I say goodbye to everybody. And this is probably, the game started at 7. So I want to say this is about 8:30. I stopped at the, at my guy's shop, say hi. And then I realized that I spend a lot of time alone, but I'm okay with that, if that makes any sense.
Absolutely.
And I just figured that, you know, I'd go home, eat some rice and some chicken, and watch some TV and go to sleep. And then I'd get up and get, you know, do something Sunday, because wifey's out of town. Wifey was out of town since Thursday. And so I'm like, cool, I think I might go to the Harbor Park and work out since I don't have anything to do. That was Saturday evening. Sunday morning at 5:29, I wake up to a sharp pain in my head. Now, I'm a migraine sufferer, so this isn't anything new. But it's at the middle of my head and not between the eyes. It's normally between the eyes where it starts. So I just figured, oh, shoot, the rice I ate was bad, or the chicken I ate was bad. It wasn't the rice, because the rice I had just made. So I walked to the bathroom to get me some 2 500 milligram Tylenol or aspirin, acetaminophen. On the way there, I felt a little wonky. But I figured it's, you know, because I just woke up and everything. I took the aspirin, and on the way back, I started to drift to the right.
Like physically, yeah, or visually, or both?
Physically and visually.
Okay.
Just dizzy. So I hurried up and I sat down real quick. And sat down and I was like, man, this headache is crazy. But I had heard food poisoning stories before. And I knew it was like flu-like symptoms, upset stomach.
Sure.
Maybe dizziness, you know. As I sat there, though, I became more and more nauseous. So I quickly emptied out the receptacle next to the couch, because I knew I was going to unleash.
Sure.
So I did. I went, and I've been out of the throw-up game for a long time. So I
was. It's not pleasant.
It's not. But I was able to get it into the trash can, and it was very. It was minimal. It wasn't like food or anything. It felt like bile. And so I laid down, but as I laid down, the room started to spin. So I quickly got to my elbow. And so I'm laying down. I'm lying down, and I have my arm on the couch. My other arm is on my hip, and I'm balancing. And I'm like, I can't lay down because it feels like the room is going crazy.
Right.
I can't sit up because the room will go crazy. Like, this is the only place
that it feels any semblance of normal.
So I sat there for a while. And for a while, I mean probably like a half hour.
It probably felt like...
It felt like longer.
Yeah.
It felt like... But I'm watching as the day is... as the night is turning into day. And it's not that much time has passed. And so I'm like, this doesn't feel like a migraine. This doesn't feel like it. So I sat up and immediately felt sick. So I grabbed the receptacle. And I unleashed.
Was it the same kind of production as the first time, or was there more?
The first time was easier.
Sure.
The first time was a lot easier.
But this time you're like dry heaving and there's nothing coming out?
Well, there's still stuff coming out.
Okay.
There's still, because I drink a lot of water. This time I feel the aspirin, like I could taste it, and I'm like, okay, but there's that. There's there's the pain reliever.
Yeah, it didn't even get into your bloodstream.
Mm-hmm. And then I laid back down. I laid back to the spot where I was. I was like, well, this is my happy spot. I laid there for a while. Sat up again. Immediately felt nauseous. I felt just nauseous. So I let go. And this went on for about seven times.
So this is over the course of that half an hour?
No, this is over the course of...
the entire time that this is going on.
Yeah, so this is over the course of like... Maybe we're coming up on 7 o'clock. Maybe we're coming up on quarter after 7.
Sure. So this is a couple hours. Now, sorry to interrupt, but I just want to go back. When you woke up, were there any... Did you... Let's go back to Saturday night, I suppose. When you were going to bed Saturday night and when you were waking up, or maybe between when you went to bed and when you woke up, were you having any other symptoms of not feeling well or feeling off or anything like that? You, no. I mean, you ate the chicken and rice. Mm-hmm. You went to bed. You felt fine, mm-hmm. as you normally do, because mm-hmm. you have your very routine in your diet and regimen. So you went to sleep, yes. you woke up, and then boom, here we are. You go through all this stuff. So it's 7 o'clock in the morning. This is now the seventh time you've gotten up and retched.
Right. And I haven't really moved from the couch. I haven't moved because I know that it's not good. I can barely move my right side at this point.
Oh no.
I can barely move it. So I sit there and I think, and I'm cold now. I'm freezing because I basically thrown up all of the nutrients that have that have kept me warm. And I sat there for a little bit longer and realized I have to go number two. But I can't walk. I can't walk. I'm not going to go on myself because there's still, I have pride.
Well, you're still cognizant. Right. And you're still having.
Right. But I know that I have to go. So I think of ways that I'm going to do it. And eventually I fall asleep. Probably for about 15 minutes. Mm-hmm. And I wake up and for the eighth time, I feel nauseous. Let go. And then I tell myself, look, you have to go to the bathroom. This is it. So I proceed to put the receptacle on the floor and crawl to the bathroom. Now, it doesn't seem that many steps when you're walking in the apartment.
But it might as well be a mile when you're having those kinds of symptoms.
Right. So I push the receptacle in front of me and I start to crawl, but my right arm wants to go wide right. So I have to concentrate on making my right arm center. So it took me probably about 3 minutes.
Which, for context, because we're sitting in your apartment right mm-hmm. now, we are literally butt up against your couch, mm-hmm. and your bathroom is, what, 20 feet away from yeah. where, I mean, maybe that's
if,
a little long,
if that.
Maybe 15 feet away from, mm-hmm. from where we are right now. So imagine, for those of you listening, that a walk that should take no more than 5 seconds, if you just get up and walk over there at a normal pace, is now going 3 minutes to crawl over there. That's almost like when you're in Chicago traffic and you're trying to go 3 miles mm-hmm. and it takes you an hour because mm-hmm. the traffic is so bad. It's not that 3 miles is that long when you're driving, but when you've got a lot of things in your way or you've got a condition or something is happening, 3 minutes to crawl 20 feet is insanely long.
Yeah, it is. And so I finally get to the bathroom. I'm on the floor and I have the receptacle and I have to rest. I'm feeling a little bit nauseous, but I hold in and I just sit there. Excuse me. I sat there for about 5 minutes and then I was like, all right, now you need to get up on this toilet. So I sat up real quick. Onto the toilet, very sloppily, banging my head against the walls. And then I sat on the toilet, fully clothed. And then I rested for a second. Went away.
It's all right.
So I sat for about five minutes, and then I slid my pants down. It was solid, which I was okay.
That's a good sign.
It's a pretty good sign. Finished up. I ain't going to get into too much detail, but I was able to clean myself up. And
we can paint the rest right. of the picture.
I slid my clothes back on, and I waited there on the toilet for a little while because I needed to rest. I knew that I needed a timeout.
Well, you're probably exhausted.
Yeah.
It took you 3 minutes to crawl. your something clearly neurological is going on, because your brain is not allowing your right hand or your right side to work appropriately. So you muster whatever strength you have to get into the bathroom, and then you are able to successfully use the bathroom, and now you're exhausted from all of that, and of course you need to rest, and also trying to maybe figure out what the hell's going on.
Right. But not scared. No panic was through me. What is happening? None of that. It's just get here, rest. Get there, rest. Mm-hmm. So I squeezed under the floor, squeezed myself under the floor, and I rested. And then I walked back. And I crawled. I crawled the same way I did that. I got to the bathroom. I pushed. I centered my arm. I pushed the receptacle. I centered my arm. And it took about 3 minutes.
So it wasn't any easier.
No.
After you
no.
got done in the bathroom.
In fact, it might have been harder. So I got back to the couch, and I laid back down, and I told myself, all right, the day is starting to break. You can either have to ride this out, or you're going to have to call somebody. Remember, I'm by myself.
Right.
Which
is not unusual, because you've got what you do, and your wife has what she does, and it's not unusual.
She's visiting family.
Right.
She's she's the last person I want to call. Right.
Sure.
Because first of all, I know now that it's the same time, but for for a split second, I thought that it was they were an hour behind. So I'm thinking it's still morning there. It's still dark.
Sure.
So I get to the point where I'm sitting on the couch. I'm thinking to myself, look, bro, it's starting to get light outside. You're going to have to make a decision. But you have to rest. You have to rest. So I rested probably about an hour. So right now it's about 8:45.
Now, when you say rest, did you sleep this whole time,
I fell asleep.
Okay.
I fell asleep. I wasn't conscious. I was conscious. I was awake, but I wasn't moving. I wasn't asleep. I wasn't awake. It's hard to explain.
The engine's running, but
right.
No one's behind the wheel. Right. Like the car's idling, but you're just on autopilot.
Right. Because I didn't want to drift off. I didn't want to drift off, so I kept waking myself, and I kept doing that. I kept doing that every couple of minutes, but I would keep my eyes closed. So it's hard to explain, but it's like 8:45, 9:00, and I'm like, I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do right now. So let me look through my phone. But then it really hits me, like, you're alone. And you don't want your wife to come home and find you like this. You just don't. It didn't become about me anymore. There was no panic. Now it's like, look, you don't want anybody to find you like this. And then I remember, like, the downstairs is deadbolted. And the other downstairs door is locked. And I'm up here by myself.
And no one else has a way to get in unless...
No one has a way to get in unless they break the door down.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, oh, man. All right. Close your eyes for a couple more minutes, and you're going to have to get up. So I close my eyes probably for another half hour. So it's about 9:45. And I wake up. I sit up. I don't feel the nausea like I did, so going to the bathroom helped, I'm going to say. And I grab the receptacle, and I start to crawl. That's all I know how to do. I can't walk because my right side isn't working. And I crawl to the door, and I rest. And then I rest for about 5 minutes. And then I tell myself, look, you got to open this door and you got to head downstairs. It's 19 stairs.
Yeah, it's a steep set of stairs.
Oh, well. So I open the door and I start to, I go ass first, right?
So you back down the stairs.
I backed to the stairs.
Okay.
And then I sat down. And then I laid down on my left side, and I had the receptacle in front of me. So I would go downstairs, go down with the receptacle a stair with my right hand, and then I'd slide down two with the left side of my body. So I was going down the stairs like that.
Were you using your left arm or left hand to sort of... kind of as a break to control how far you were going down?
Yeah, my left arm stayed above my head. It stayed above my head. So okay. imagine if you put your left arm up and you put your right arm in front of you, and your right arm is the receptacle. The right arm is kind of balancing you, but you can't depend on it. So you have to lean against the wall. You have to lean against the wall, and you have to slide down.
So You're laying on your left side.
Mm-hmm.
Your left arm is up.
I'm laying on my left side. I'm facing.
And essentially, your right arm is sticking straight out in front of you,
mm-hmm.
almost as if your left arm fist and your right arm, which is holding the trash can, is sticking out in the same direction.
Right. They're sticking on the same direction.
But your body weight is on your left arm.
Mm-hmm.
And that's your left side is essentially holding your weight. While your right arm, which is only about as usable as holding that trash can,
yep.
is literally just holding the trash can.
Right.
Okay.
So I get down the stairs, one at a time, and it took me, and the whole time I'm doing this, my eyes are closed because I can't open them. I can open them when I'm sitting in that one spot. And the one spot where I'm leaning on my left arm, and
so one position you can function as far as opening your eyes, but every other time you're
right,
your eyes are closed.
Right. And so I get down to the bottom of the stairs and I wait and I just rest. I don't know what the temperature was, but it's starting to get cold towards the garage because my apartment is up above a garage. If that's of any consequence. But it's cold where I'm at. I sit there for about 5 minutes. I'm going to say 5 minutes. It could have been longer. I unlock the door and I crawl to the front door. I don't know how many feet that is. We'll just say it's 20.
Yeah, I think that's pretty accurate. It's probably maybe 10 feet or 5 or 10 feet longer than it is from your couch to the bathroom.
Yeah.
It's a straight hallway, yeah. But yeah, it's not short by any means.
It's probably 30 degrees. No, it's probably 39 degrees, 40 degrees inside the garage, but the floor is cold.
And not carpeted.
No,
I mean, it's concrete.
It's concrete. And, excuse me. So I get to the thing, I rest, I don't even really unlock the door. I rest for 2 seconds. Then I undeadbolt the door and then I open it. I open it just a crack. And, I sit there for a long time. The eyes are still closed. And, I'm like, all right, cool. Now they don't have to kick the door open to find your body. Now you have to go upstairs and get comfortable because this is it. Because it's still early in the morning and You just need to get upstairs and get comfortable. So I'm still resting, and I fall asleep, but not asleep. It's hard to explain. But then I tell myself, like, look, you have to get up because this floor is freezing, and they're gonna find you here. So I'm like, all right, fine. I'll make my way. My eyes closed. The motion sensor goes off. It comes on. It goes off. It goes on. It mm-hmm. comes on. And it, to give you a for instance, it gives you about 10 seconds.
Yes.
For the front door to the whatever, for the motion sensor to come on. It probably came on about 6-7 times.
Which means it took you at least 60 seconds
right.
to go right. from.
Well, yeah, it will say that, but it would come on, it would go off.
Oh, no, let me retract that, because it means that it went off enough times to where it didn't think you were moving or that there was no motion, so right. it would shut off.
Right.
So who knows how long yeah. you were down there.
Yeah, because I would be moving. And there'd be no light. And then all of a sudden it would come on.
Right.
So I was down there for a minute. Each time it's getting it's more difficult because it's getting more and more. It's more dizzy. It's getting more difficult to move. I get to the bottom of the stairs. I rest. And I don't know why that was key. But I rested. And I closed the door. And it was 10 degrees warmer. And I just remember, like, oh, this feels so good. You can make it upstairs. So I made it upstairs. I did the exact same thing, opposite of what I did. I still had the receptacle. I still had everything.
But now you got to go up the stairs.
Yeah.
This isn't sliding downstairs slowly. This is literally crawling up a very steep set of 20 stairs.
Yeah.
Jesus.
So, eventually I make it. I don't close the door. I just sit there, in the doorway, and I'm like, good. You're up here. It feels so warm. Then I crawled back to the couch. I sat in my little spot, where I could open my eyes for a second, look for my phone. I was able to locate my phone. And then I put my phone by me. And I went to sleep. I went to sleep for, I don't know, maybe a couple hours.
So, just to rewind a little bit, mm-hmm. you went downstairs.
Mm-hmm.
You made your way down. There's a door at the bottom of your stairs. So, there's a door into your apartment. There's a door at the bottom of your stairs between the stairs and the front door that lets you into the hallway that gets to your apartment.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have gone from being in bed.
No, I'm sorry. I wasn't in bed.
No. I'm going back to all the way. You went from being in bed.
I spent the night on the couch.
Oh, you slept on the couch. Yeah. Okay. So mm-hmm. you went from waking up in the morning.
Right.
Feeling off,
yeah,
going back and forth between laying down flat and being sort of in a half prone position,
mm-hmm.
Vomiting as much as you could vomit, making your way to the bathroom 20 feet away, pulling yourself, crawling essentially, if you want to call it crawling, because it was probably half crawl, half yeah. like pulling your weight, coming back to the couch, making the decision to, you know, I need someone, like, someone's got to find their way here. I don't know how it's going to happen. And, you know, you weren't in your right mind, obviously. Having the presence of mind to take yourself down the stairs, open or unlock the deadbolt on the front door, then come all the way back up here, make it back to the couch, and then fall asleep for a couple hours. So this started at, what, 5 in the morning?
5:29.
And by this time, it's what, 9:30 mm-hmm. when you finally get back up here and you go to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
You wake up a couple hours later.
Yes.
And then what?
Okay, so I told myself, hey, bitch.
sorry.
I told myself, okay. So if somebody's going to find you, you have to let them know that you're here. And it wasn't, I don't want her, I don't want my wife to come home to me like that. You know what I mean? It wasn't about me. It was about someone finding me before her. Either they could dress me. I was dressed. But either I wouldn't be laying there.
So, and I'm going to ask because I need this clarification. Are you implying that you thought that your time was up, that you were going to be found dead?
Yeah.
And that if you were going to be found dead, you wanted it to be someone else who found you, not your wife, because you wanted whoever found you to at least get you in a situation where your wife won't come home and see you in the position or the state that you're in.
Right.
Okay.
Right. Or come home to a certain smell or whatever. You know what I mean? I just didn't want her to be like find me like that. And so now it's time for me to look at my phone. And again, it's Sunday. I don't know who is up because I'm up usually at 7:30, 7:00,
sure.
Whatever. But I'm usually up alone. My wife is usually asleep. You know what I'm saying? I'm letting her do her thing. So I don't really hang out with, I don't really call anybody to be like, hey, come whatever. I'm going to just do it.
Sure.
So then I'm sitting there, I'm going through my phone. I'm going through the A's. And I'm like, first of all, it's very hard to see.
Yeah.
Second of all, it's like, I don't know who I would really trust with this because, when you're faced with something like that, you don't want the worst to come out of you. You don't want the worst to be seen. Because most of these people have seen you at your best. Nobody has really seen you at your worst. The only one that has seen you like that is your significant other. But she's gone.
Uh-huh.
She's on vacation.
And even if she weren't on vacation,
I don't want her to see me like that. She doesn't need to see me like that. So it's like, all right, well, who do I trust that could get here, and see me in a messed up state? I couldn't think of it. I'm still in the A's. It's hard to focus because everybody is moving. Everybody is I'm so dizzy. So I just start scrolling. And I'm like, no, not that person. I finally get to the J's. Okay. The J's. And then I remember a man that was in my wedding. His name is Joe. His name is Joey. And over the last few years, me and Joey have gotten, you know, we've rekindled. Not that our relationship or our friendship has gone on the wayside, but things happen.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Life gets in the way.
Right.
But I'm like, okay, I'm going to call him. I trust him. So I text them first. I text them, and that was hard. That was extremely hard. It took me probably about 10 minutes to text.
Well, you're not left-handed, right?
No.
And now your brain, which is already clearly having something affect it, is now trying to will your left side to send a text message. And for those of you who maybe forgot, you can't really see.
No. So it took me about 10 minutes to ask, what are you doing? What are you doing? It took me 10 minutes. Because the L is so close to the back, and the back is so is close to the period, and the period is so close to the space, and everything, and there was no talking because I couldn't find the talk text thing, and then you have to hold that thing.
Mm-hmm.
So what are you doing? I wait for about 10 minutes and no response. And I'm like, oh, man. She gets back. And she gets back on Saturday. So I guess I'll be in here for whatever, you know, the next week. But then I was like, you know, let me call. So I called, and it was him. He answered. He was like, hey, man. And I said, hey, what are you doing? And he said, I'm just chilling here with so-and-so. I'm not going to say any names because I don't know if
it doesn't. Well, it doesn't matter.
Okay.
You can use a pseudonym if you want to.
He was like, I'm chilling with my significant other. And I was like, okay. He was like, what are you up to? I was like, listen, I need you to do me a favor. I need you to take me to the hospital. And he was like, why, what's wrong? And I was like, I'll explain everything when you get here. But
get here.
I need you to take me to the hospital. I need you to take me to Aurora. Now, which is sad because I live downtown Kenosha. I live downtown. And
the closest Aurora is out by the interstate.
Right.
That's a good 8-9 miles from here.
Mm-hmm. And that's with the lights. that's a good 8 minutes. So I'm he's like, okay, all right, I'll be right there. So he comes there, and at least I'm like, so now I get to close my eyes. Now I get to really close my eyes and just let whatever take me. Because at that point, there was no hospital.
But you, mentally, you were, you know, I found someone, they're on their way, I can relax a little bit more, but like, you don't know what's going on. So you're like, I'm not going to necessarily fight this feeling of trying to keep myself awake. The door's unlocked downstairs, he can let himself in, he knows that he needs to get here, he knows it's important, so...
Right.
Whatever happens, happens.
Right. I was all set to not go to the hospital. I was all set for him just to find me. Just to find me gone. And, yeah. So he gets here. He gets here and, like, he must have been fifth gear all the way over here. Because I hear the door. Like, I'll tell you what I hear. I go to sleep, and I was like, you did good. Yes. Crying like a bitch.
There's nothing wrong with it, man. I don't want to interrupt the story, and I'm trying to let you do all the talking here because there's a lot, obviously, to unpack here. Because for those of you listening, I had no idea. This is all brand new information to me. And so when we discussed recording another episode, and he said, man, I got a story for you. I got to tell you this. And I'm thinking, oh, this is probably going to be one of those gut-busting stories about something that happened at work or something that you saw it on the street or something like that. This is new to me. This is a surprise to me. I wasn't expecting this. And I have a lot of questions and a lot of things to say. And it's not about me. However, I will say that I know where this is going, probably. I know that this is not a situation that ends with happy news, except the fact that you're still here and you're across from me telling me the story. And for the people who know you, you're still here and alive to tell the story. But I do know that it's probably something serious medically, which is unfortunate and also surprising, given the fact that you are in incredible shape, physically, mentally. And so it's surprising, even at a guy at your age, and you're not that old by any stretch of the imagination, to have this happen. And now all the things that you said at the opening make a lot of sense about how, you know, the cliche about, you know, live every day like it's your last, right? Well, Muhammad Ali once said, live every day like it's your last, because eventually you're going to be right.
Yeah.
And sometimes something happens to you and it may not be your last day, but like, you're convinced this is it for me. And I'm like, I'm about to go to my dirt. And so I'm saying all this to say that if you get emotional, and you have every right to be emotional, there's nothing wrong with it. That doesn't make you weak. It doesn't make you less of a person. It shouldn't change anyone's perspective of you. This is hard. Mm. It's hard for me to listen to, and I'm, man. So the fact that you've gotten through all this, 40 minutes of telling the story, and this is when you break, who cares, man? There's no judgment here. And anyone who has judgment about the fact that you're emotional about it, honestly, can go fuck themselves. Mm. That's all I'm going to say.
All right. I'm back. And I didn't mean anything disrespectful as far as crying. I don't
apologize. Don't apologize.
All right. I haven't cried since
June
18th, 2005.
I've never seen you cry.
All right. So, I closed my eyes and I'm like, all right, man, you did it. He'll find you here. And I go to sleep. And then I know that it's going to be my last sleep. I hear him pull up and I hear him dart up the stairs. And he's like, what's wrong? I'm like, all right, I need you to sit down. And he's like, okay. And I said, I need you to calm down. All right. And I'll be calm with you. And he says, okay. And I said, all right. And I explained to him that I woke up with a migraine, what I thought was a migraine. I took some aspirin. I've been throwing up. I have to get to Aurora. And I need you to be able to do that. Can you do that for me? And he was like, yeah. I said, okay, cool. I said, this is what we'll do. I said, we'll rest for a second. I said, because I need to rest. And he said, okay. And he was asking me, he was like, can you stick your tongue out to the left, to the right? And I was able to. He was asking if I could finger pads, thumb to index to middle to ring, thumb to ring, pinky to thumb. And I was like, yeah, and I'm both hands. Now, my right side, I could do it, but I couldn't do it well. And the whole time I'm not sick, I'm not nauseous, but I feel like I'm not doing it well. I say, let me just sit here for a couple minutes. And then he says, okay. So he's like, hey man, we've been here for a couple minutes. The more you sit here, the more it will probably get worse.
Mm-hmm.
So let's go. And I was like, all right, fine. Let me get my coat. Let me get some shoes. He grabbed my shoes and stuff. And then I said, this is what we're going to do. You're going to go get the car. You're going to run back and I'm going to crawl down the stairs. And I said, I'll meet you at the bottom of the stairs. And he said, well, why can't I just, put you on my back and we'll do this Yoda style. And I was like, look, man, just go get the car. I'll meet you downstairs. So he left. And I was like, well, you have to go now.
Uh-huh.
You know, he's here. You made it through. So I crawled. I grabbed the receptacle. I crawled, met him at the bottom of the stairs. And then he walked me to his car. And it was hard. It was probably hard on him to walk. I was going every which way. And he sat me down in the car, put my safety belt on, and headed up to Aurora. And we went to the emergency. and he got me a wheelchair, and we waited. We waited.
And I'm assuming that he had told the person at the reception area that you are, there's something seriously wrong with you.
I'm sure he did. I didn't ask him that. The whole time I'm thinking on the way up there, like, should you have just stayed? He's going through so much right now as it is. Should you have just stayed? The good news is your wife won't find you there. Okay, so if something happens to you now, she'll be able to find you at the hospital. And that makes more sense. So we get in there, we check in. He gives my name. They ask what's wrong. I say my head dizzy, my head was hurting, my right side isn't working. They hook me up to EKG, do the echocardiogram. The guy's trying to be funny. I'm trying to be funny. It's just not really helping. So that was waiting room one. Then they put us in waiting room two. And at this time, it's probably, I say 1:30 maybe.
Okay.
And then finally, they, like, I go to sleep. My head is facing down. I'm in a wheelchair. I probably look dead to the world. He's got to look at me the whole time. And then finally we get to waiting room three. The whole time they haven't told us anything. We're just waiting. I got my eyes closed. I can hear people coughing. I hear people complaining. I hear people
talking on the phone,
talking about how this person went ahead of them, and this person is.
And then Taylor Swift showed up.
Yeah, and then she showed up, and then she started singing off monotone and stuff.
And then you wish that.
I wish that I stayed in the apartment.
So you said you're waiting room two. You're still out front. Is that what you're saying? Mm-hmm. Or did they take you to the back to run this EKG and take your blood pressure?
So the EKG, so we get in there, give the name. That's where it says emergency. They wheeled me into a separate room, a quiet room. He did an EKG on me. He didn't put any saline on me. And then, we go out into the waiting room. So I see the emergency room again, the emergency sign and the waiting room where people either are waiting to go in with a cut and their stomach aches,
or get a sick note for work.
Yeah. Or waiting on somebody. So we in there and they're probably about 1:30 and we're there until about 5:30
waiting.
Yeah.
Not between the time you got there and the time you were discharged. It's 4 hours. Literally, you're waiting.
Right.
5 hours.
Right.
Jesus.
So then we go to the third waiting room, and they're like, "Who's this?" And I'm like, "That's my brother Joe. Like he came to save me. He's riding with me." And I'm like, "All right." So we go in the third waiting room. The specialist comes in. First nurse comes in and she asks if there's, like, I have a vomit bag, you know what I'm saying? Because they're taking my receptacle away. I've had it the whole time. I haven't used it. And then as soon as I get in the third waiting room, I start to throw up again. And they're asking, and this whole time I'm trying not to sound like a hype. I'm trying not to sound like a drug addict.
Like you have the DTs.
I'm trying to get everything off the right way. I'm using words like acetaminophen. I'm using words like I'm doing everything correctly.
Right. You're trying to over-explain so that they know that, like, this is serious. And I'm not just here, you know, with a piece of a splinter in my finger.
Right. So finally, the guy comes in. The specialist. Specialist. And he's not. He's the ER doctor. He's the ER doctor.
Okay.
He's not a specialist.
But so he's the attending physician.
Right. And he asks what's going on. And I'm like, this is the deal. I woke up at this time, headache, blah, 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 blah. And he's like, okay. He was like, do me a favor. And he's checking my right side. He's checking my left side. He's checking power. He's checking all that. He's like, you seem like you have all the power there. Your coordination just seems to be off. Because I'm getting better now.
Sure.
So then he puts me on later on with a neurosurgeon on a Zoom call.
Okay.
And he's asking me things. He's asking me to see. He's asking me to point at my nose, point at my whatever.
The standard battery of neurological tests.
Yeah. Okay. Rub your ankle, rub your heel against your shin on both legs and stuff like that. And then he's like, okay, any history of stroke in your family? And I'm like, yeah, my granny died on her fourth stroke. I said, but my granny was diabetic. My granny had, she was missing a limb. She was missing half her leg on the other. Like she was probably like 63, 64. She had a hard life. And I'm like, but you're still young. We don't know what's going on. I said, I don't know what's going on either. So they took me in to do a CAT scan, a CT scan. And then I lay down. They put me through the thing. I came back out. I told Joe, like, look, go home. Go home to your significant other. And I'll call you when I'm through. I'll call you when I'm done. Let you know if everything's okay.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, you sure? And I was like, there's nothing you can do here. There's nothing you can do. And he left, you know. He didn't want to leave. He did not want to leave at all. But there wasn't anything he could do.
Well, of course. I mean, he came here to your house to, you know, because you asked him to. You said something was wrong. Of course, he takes you to the hospital. Of course, he's not going to want to leave. He's concerned about his friend.
Right. And I knew that. I knew that too. I just didn't want him to stay. But he needed to be at home. He needed to be hugging his girl, his girls. He needed to be with his family. So he left, and again, I am alone. Which is fine because I'm used to that. So then the doctor comes in and asks, where's your friend at? I sent him home. I said, okay, we're going to admit you because it's showing, the CT is showing a small injury in your cerebellum.
An injury?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They're using careful words. And I was like, okay. My mind is telling me, okay, I had a stroke. I had a stroke.
That was my first guess, was right. That you had a stroke.
And he's like, yeah, the problem is we don't know where it came from. We don't know. So we're going to have to overnight you. So they came and asked me this little questions. Again, asking if anybody has had strokes young strokes. I'm like, no. Finally, they came and they told me that they had saw an original injury to the cerebellum. They didn't tell me how old it was, but they said that I had passed a blood clot and that I needed to. I had a blood clot and then it passed. But there was an older injury there too. And it could have been a result of, I don't know. I don't know exactly what was said. Mind you, I'm not under any influence of drugs yet.
haven't really been involved in any drugs at all.
No, but mentally, you're not all there.
Right.
I mean, they're trying to take what they can consider an accurate family history from someone who clearly has a neurological issue going on right now. And you're giving them the best information you possibly can based on how well your brain is working at the present moment. So all the information you have says you had a blood clot, you passed that blood clot, but there's an injury to your cerebellum. Are they saying that that threw a clot?
Yeah.
Okay.
They're saying that the blood clot went through there. I had been experiencing dizziness weeks before. That's neither here nor there, but I had experienced it. I went to get it looked at, and it's neither here nor there. But back to the hospital. So this whole time I haven't eaten, I haven't had anything to drink. But I'm just like, oh, well, I was like, I'm extremely dehydrated.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, we really don't want to give you anything. Did
they at least hook you up to an IV for God's sake?
No.
Jesus.
No. So they wanted to see if I'm able to hold things down. So they gave me a test, where I sipped on some water. A capful, then I sipped down another capful, and then another one, and then finally a fourth one, and I was able to keep it down, and that's all they gave me.
Even after this test that they give you, they're like, oh, okay, that's good.
Well, they gave me a 12-ounce styrofoam cup of water, some ice in it. But they put that thing so far away
that they might as well not have given it to you.
They shouldn't have gave it to me. I'm looking at it. I'm looking at it, and it's probably about three steps away. But I'm on this bed. And so I was just like, all right, take those four that you had and enjoy them. So I enjoyed them. They were nice.
makes crawling to the bathroom seem easy
now. Yeah, right? So then they sent me to my room, some other things happened. Other nurses, other doctors, came in there. I sent Joe on. He said, "Do you want me to call your wife?" I said, "Yes, please. Let her know that I'm okay. That everything is fine. Uh-huh. Everything's fine. The doctors are working hard. They're trying to figure it out. There's nothing that she can do.
No need to panic.
Make her tell her to stay there. Tell her I said to stay there. Everything's fine. I'm where I need to be." She calls later on, and she's trying to fight back tears. I'm like, look, everything's fine. Everything's fine. She agrees, and then I was like, look, I really need to go to sleep. I'll talk to you later. And hung up. So I'm in the room. I'm in the room, and they keep coming in and out, in and out. Like they can't believe it, because I'm not one of those guys. I'm not a burger guy. I'm not I exercise regularly. I do everything.
It's an anomaly.
Yeah. So they finally, I'm gonna jump ahead a little bit. Finally, at like 10 o'clock
in the evening.
In the evening, I'm in my room, and the nurse says, "My name is Frankie. I'll be your nurse this evening. I'll be the nurse practitioner or whatever she is. She's in charge, and we're gonna be coming here every 2 hours." And I say, "Great." I haven't had anything to eat or drink. I'm not hungry, I said, but I'm really dehydrated. And she was like, okay. So then somebody else comes in and says, "Hey, have you done the test yet?" And I was like, "Yeah, I've done the four caps of whatever." She was like, "Okay, we usually don't give people the IV yet until we know something." Long story short, the doctor came in and told them it's fine. And when they gave the IV, I could like feel that immediately. And then I was able to rest. I didn't go to sleep. I just closed my eyes, and they were asking, you know, they were asking, why do you have your eyes closed? I was like, because I don't know if it's going to be dizzy or if the room's going to be spinning or whatever. So I'll keep them closed. So I opened my eyes, and it didn't seem dizzy anymore. And then I closed them, and then I woke up at 12, at 2, at 4. Every 2 hours. So
are they drawing blood while they're coming in, or are they just...
Sometimes they're drawing blood.
Checking your vitals?
Sometimes they're checking the nose, the vitals. They're checking the nose if I could point, see if I could do a break, see if I could pull up.
Just testing your strength, because obviously they right now the theory is you had a stroke, and they want to make sure that it's not happening again.
Right. And so there. And we're off into Monday. That's Monday.
That was a week?
No. That was a day.
Oh, Jesus. Oh, yeah, because this started Friday. Well, it didn't start Friday night, but the story started Friday night.
Right.
After the show.
Mm-hmm.
And you came, and then, you came home?
And then Friday. And then Saturday, I went to the basketball game.
Mm.
And then I saw the basketball game. And then Sunday at 5:29 a.m. is when it started hurting. And so we were going into Monday. Monday was pretty straight, though. Monday was pretty straight. They did a lot of tests. They did a lot of checking of the blood. They did a lot of MRIs. Well, they did a MRI. They did something else. I can't remember. And
an MRI with contrast?
Is that when they put the fluid in you?
Yeah.
The dye?
See if there's a clot still floating around?
Mm-hmm. But everything came back great, they said. Let's just jump ahead to Tuesday.
Before we do, at any point, did they say that they thought maybe there was a cardiovascular issue, that maybe you had a heart attack, or that, like, hey, you're going to need a stent put in and have a pacemaker put on, like anything like that?
Mm-hmm. Let's jump into Tuesday.
Tuesday, you're still in the hospital.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So Tuesday, I wake up, and they say, Tuesday, we're going to have to we're going to do a test on you. Oh, Monday, my brother and his wife came to visit. And so he's asking questions.
Sure, of course.
And my sister-in-law is a nurse. So she's on top of it. Everything.
Yep.
So they're asking questions there, whatever. I'm trying my hardest to get some sleep, because I haven't been to sleep. I haven't had anything really to eat.
Coming in every 2 hours.
I just want to sleep.
Yeah.
So fast forward to when we're on Monday or Tuesday.
Jumping to Tuesday.
Tuesday, now I have to wake up early, and probably around 6, because they're doing this TE test. TE test consists of... first they did a EKG test on me on Monday night, and that was check my heart.
Mm-hmm.
They really couldn't see anything, so they're gonna do a TE scan on Tuesday. TE scan, for those of you that don't know, is you gargle the stuff, and it tastes like lighter fluid. you gargle it and you swallow it. And then they take this camera and they shove it down your throat, and they put it next to your heart, and they see if, all right, let me go back. When they did the cardiovascular,
the EKG,
yeah, the echocardiogram, they, shot my heart full of bubbles.
Okay.
To see if the bubbles were going anywhere. They couldn't really tell. The bubbles weren't going anywhere in the front. So, TE scan, they make me swallow this camera. Then they're filming the back of my heart. And they ended up telling me that there's a small hole at the top of my heart that what happens when you're in vitro is you don't have any lungs, right? So you have these holes in your heart that the blood can travel through.
Mm-hmm.
And then as you get older, you develop lungs, and the heart and the hole starts to shrivel up. Mm-hmm. It starts to shrink and close. Some people it doesn't, and that's fine, and they can live healthy lives without it. Some people's is enormous, and they either have to get closed or whatever, murmur or AFib or whatever.
Yeah.
So I have a small opening. And they said that they could go in through the wrist and close it, or they could go through the groin and close it. They don't know yet. It's neither here nor there.
But all this that they are finding, they did through the transesophageal echo.
Yes.
Where they had you swallow. Now, is this a camera on like a tube, or is it like, did they have you swallow a pill?
No, that's a camera on the tube.
Okay.
So my throat was hurting. It wasn't that bad, but it was
irritating. It's uncomfortable.
Yeah. So that's that.
So through the wrist or through the groin in order to repair the hole.
Right. And then they're just like, that's not an issue right now. You know, your heart is strong. You know, you just have this thing. We still kind of don't know why you had this stroke at such a young age. You're 45 years old. Okay. That's fine. I'd like to.
Can I eat something?
Yeah.
Can I drink something? Can I get some damn sleep?
I've got some oatmeal finally, I think a hamburger.
Was it the best oatmeal you ever tasted?
It was pretty good. It was pretty good. I'm not a big fan of oatmeal, but it was pretty good. So then I'm like, all right, I got that done. And they're like, okay, we need you to spend another night in here. And I'm like, okay. No.
Whatever.
And
gotta do what you gotta do.
Yeah. And so Wednesday they let me out. Wednesday late afternoon. Well, Wednesday afternoon, we'll say. Like we won't say late. And I got released to my brother's house. And just been at my brother's house, relaxing, trying to get. Now, if anybody has listened to the old podcast, they'll know that my voice is different.
I was actually, I noticed that when you first started talking, because I thought you sound like you're just getting over a cold or a flu or mm-hmm. maybe laryngitis, but you literally had a tube shoved down your throat, which can affect the vocal quality of your voice until it either heals or sometimes it's permanent.
Yeah. And what's crazy is, like, I can't enunciate certain words. So I have to do my vocabulary. I have to do these tongue twisters. But what's crazy for me is that my voice changed before I had the
transiphas. Okay.
My voice just changed. My voice, yeah, I don't know what it is.
It doesn't sound like you still sound like you, but it sounds weaker.
Yeah.
Like it's not as strong or supported.
Yeah. And I don't know what that is. I talked to my boy, because I didn't tell too many people why I was in the hospital. I just told people that I was in the hospital. I'll explain later.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm good. I'm okay. I'm doing good. I figured that I'd let them know this way.
And for those of you who, you know, not that this is, you know, remarkable news as far as your throat, but like, you're not a smoker.
No.
You don't smoke cigars, you don't smoke cigarettes, so there's no reason, you're certainly not like a screamer or a singer, so there's no reason why, outside of not knowing why it happened, that your voice is going through what it's going through, and you didn't have your tonsils taken out.
Right, right. So, my boy told me, he was like, your voice is different, and I was like, yeah, it's not the same. It's, I don't know. Is it more pain? I don't know. I don't know. We'll figure out once we get these vocabulary straight.
Now, as far as the vocabulary is concerned, is that because of your throat or is that neurological? Is this a side effect of the stroke?
Either or. I don't know.
So Tuesday, they do the transesophageal echo.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
They say that you have a hole in your heart,
mm-hmm.
that it's not the core problem of what's wrong, but it's something to address.
Right.
Right. They still don't know what the cause of the stroke was because you're young, you're in good shape. They tell you we can fix the heart either by going through the wrist or through the groin. We get into Wednesday. They discharge you from the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
Now at this point, have they done the surgery to correct the heart problem?
No.
Or are they, is that something that's being scheduled?
That's something that will come up later. So when I was leaving there, I was equipped with a Holter monitor, heart monitor. And I was originally supposed to get that for 3 days because I was supposed to get that before I went to the hospital. All this stuff was leading up to that.
Mm-hmm.
So I had an appointment for the 9th. And I was supposed to have it for 3 days. But then I ended up getting it on Wednesday.
The 9th is today, by the way.
I know. I ended up getting it on Wednesday, and it's for 30 days. So I have this thing on my chest.
Oh, okay.
And that's why I have
another phone.
Under the phone.
Because it's synced to that phone.
Yes.
And it's sending the information in real time to the doctors.
Yes.
Okay.
So I'll have to wear this for another 3 weeks, another 4 weeks. Actually, I get it April 6th. April 6th, I get to take it off. And then I stayed at my brother's house Thursday, Friday. I just got home this morning. So that's a week.
Okay.
Wednesday, so, Thursday, Friday.
Yeah. So now I'm going to ask a bunch of questions.
Okay.
For me and for anyone who might be listening, because I'm sure as people are listening to this, and by the time you hear this, obviously I'm listening to it now, you're listening to a recording, but I'm finding this out as he's telling me the story. I didn't know this entire time. I saw you at Avenue Q.
Mm-hmm.
Everything seemed fine.
Yep.
You know, show went well. We parted ways, you went home, and that's pretty much it.
Yeah.
Now, as we're sitting here talking, I'm looking in my phone and I'm thinking, when was the last time we talked, right? Because outside of Avenue Q, if all this stuff happened, whatever, and I'm looking at my phone and it's like, oh, it last week,
mm-hmm.
middle of last week,
mm-hmm.
which means this is after you've left the hospital. And even after you've left the hospital, you still haven't told me that you were in the hospital.
Yeah.
Now, you don't, you know, it's not my business and you don't owe me an explanation. But a couple of things. Number one, at any point during, you know, you wake up, you have these symptoms, you're not sure what's going on, but you're not panicking because mm-hmm. in your mind, this just is probably an offshoot of having a migraine because mm-hmm. as a migraine sufferer, and I'm not one of them, but as a migraine sufferer, when that kind of shit happens, you're like, oh, well, I'm strapping for another migraine.
Right.
But then you start to figure out this isn't just a migraine.
Mm-hmm.
There's something wrong here. And then in the back of your mind, you're like, my time is up.
Mm-hmm.
At any point between when you started to realize something's wrong and when Joey, is that his name,
mm-hmm.
shows up and picks you up to call 911. Did you ever think, man, I need to call 911? Now, full disclosure, the fact that anyone would have to contemplate calling 911 and getting an ambulance is a sad state of affairs for this country because ambulance rides are super expensive.
Yeah.
Super expensive.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if that went through your mind, but at any point, did you consider calling 911?
I considered calling 911 for about 5 seconds. But it wouldn't have done any good because my place is hard to find. And it's hard to find for a reason because I like it that way.
Sure.
So had I called 911, they wouldn't have, what, they would beat down the door? If they would have found the door.
Sure.
There was no point. I needed somebody that had been here.
That makes sense.
To be able to find me.
And also, you're going through all this stuff. How do you explain this to them?
Yeah.
In your right mind when you're not in your right mind? Okay, that makes sense. Secondly, obviously, I'm not married. And I guess it's not the point, but I understand why you feel the way you feel or felt the way you felt about, I don't want to put this on my wife. I don't want her to see me like this. How is she doing now that, you know, she's had this news? And at what point were you able to see her after everything? Because you just got home this morning.
All right. She seems to be doing all right. I haven't seen her yet. So I'll see her tonight.
So she's still out of town.
Yeah, she'll be home tonight at around 10 o'clock.
And she probably, in her mind, can't get here fast enough.
Right.
Mentally, she's been here the entire time.
Right, right. And I feel bad for her. I really do. It should have just turned out to be a nice little vacation for her. See some family and shit. And, yeah. So, she should be doing fine when she gets here. She told me she's excited to be home.
And maybe, I shouldn't have to say this, but I want to say this, and I think it needs to be said. For anyone out there who might think, well, if I were his wife, I wouldn't have cared and I would have come home. That's an oversimplification of the situation. And also, you don't understand the dynamic of this marriage. And you probably shouldn't make any assumptions like that. Because I'll tell you right now, she wanted to be here.
Mm-hmm.
That's her first instinct. Mm-hmm. Vacation be damned. She would have been here on the first thing smoking here.
Yeah.
But he said he was okay. Enjoy your time. I'll keep you posted. None of that stuff, or all of that stuff. Now, had the situation perhaps worsened, there would have been a different conversation.
Yeah.
But I don't want anyone out there to think that you're married to some woman who's like, oh, he's on his deathbed. Let's go to the beach.
She tried her damnedest to get here, and I wouldn't allow it. Even though she's capable of
making her own decisions.
Right, right, right. But she respected it. She was like, okay, I'm going to stay. I was like, you need to stay. There's nothing you can do here. There's absolutely nothing you can do here.
And I'm sure in all the conversations that you had between when you got to the hospital and when she found out, and even to this second, every conversation probably at some point she said, just let me come home. I can come home. Mm-hmm. You know, let me come home. I want to come home. I can't imagine, what's going through her mind at this point. I've known you since, man, I was 13, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, our friendship maybe wasn't immediate because I was 13.
Mm-hmm.
You were in your 20s.
Mm-hmm.
Why would we be friends?
Right.
Unless you were Michael Jackson. Sorry. I'm sorry. That was really off color. But, as your friend, I'm concerned because I relate very well to the thing you mentioned before. I'm alone a lot, and that's okay because I prefer it that way. But now you've had a situation in your life where, like, holy shit, being alone at this particular point in time might mean my end in a way that I'm not ready for, but also I've accepted because this is the life that I've made for myself. So I guess my question is does that change your outlook in how you feel about being alone? And is this something that, you know, as you're sort of marching forward, through all this, are you thinking that you need to have like a contingency plan in place? Sort of like when I had heat stroke walking to Burlington the first time, I didn't prepare very well.
Mm-hmm.
But the second time I said, I need something in place in the event that this happens again, because I can't do this on my own. And certainly if something bad happens to me, I'm screwed. I'm in the middle of nowhere. And in that sense, so are you, because you live in an apartment that, unless you know that someone lives here, you don't know the apartment's here.
Yeah.
So what's, I know that was a bunch of questions, but.
No, we'll start from the beginning. As far as contingency, as far as being alone, it hasn't really changed me because, again, I prefer to be alone. And if I was to go on, if I was to perish, I prefer to be alone when it happened. I just don't want to be found in, I just don't want to be found messed up. Okay. As far as living with dying with regret or whatever, I wouldn't. There wouldn't be anything that made my wife less proud of me than she is. So I could at least go to sleep thinking that.
Yeah. And that's enough.
Yeah.
Right? Because who the hell cares what I think or what Jimmy down the street thinks? You know, in your mind, I can go on to the next part of my life or into the afterlife knowing that my wife and I are good and that she's proud of me.
Right.
And that's the right answer.
Right. So I want you to read the date on this. It's right at near the top.
The one underneath time?
Right here. Right there.
October 17th, 2023 at 11:26 a.m. So that was just this past October.
Right. Okay. So we're gonna zoom out of that. Put the triangle. There you go. See that?
Yeah, it's a, can I say what it is? It's a picture of a electric toothbrush.
All right.
And next to it is, looks like a piece broke off.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, so I was alone that day as well. A couple months ago. And I was brushing my tongue and that piece broke off of my toothbrush and I started to choke. Alone.
And you choked on that piece of the brush head.
Right.
Okay.
Right. So since I was brushing my tongue, I pushed it further down my throat than I normally would have.
Sure.
And it was like it's either panic or don't. I chose not to panic. I looked out in his living room and I saw that, okay, if I really, really begin to choke, then I will try to Heimlich myself on that. If I don't, that will be the second thing. The first thing I'll do is I'll try to swallow this and discard it, either way. So I knew that I was forced with choice three, which was to die. So I tried to swallow it, and it went further down. And got stuck further down. And so then I asked myself, like, can you breathe? And my breath was faint. And I was like, well, you can try to cough this thing up then. And so I coughed. It moved. And I was happy. But I was like,
it's not out yet.
Right. It's still in there. And you can't take another deep breath in because you've exhausted all those. So try your hardest to cough again. And I coughed as probably for about 3 seconds, like really retched. And it moved. And then I was, on the third one, I was able to get it out. But I was alone. I was willing to accept that this was it. There was no panic. There was no, oh my God, I can't believe this. This is it. This is how you die. So I've never really been afraid of dying. I just don't want to be found. So that day I was dressed. I was clean. I was out of the shower. I was finishing up. I was dressed to the nines. If they found me, I'd be in the bathroom.
Yeah.
I'd sit up as much as I could, and I'd go. But this, I couldn't move. It was a moment of paralysis that set in, and I couldn't move until I willed myself to move. But I was still not dressed. I was still not, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I've been willing to go. I've been willing to go. I'm not waiting, but I'm going to be fine.
Like you're not afraid of.
I'm not afraid of dying. Death. I don't want to die. I'm not a psychopath. But I'm not afraid to.
So obviously this isn't your first near-death experience.
No. When I quit drinking, I had my seizure.
And somebody in the chair with half a haircut.
Yeah.
Took you to the hospital.
Nope. Well, he called 911.
Sure.
You know what I mean? And I think ever since then, I haven't really been afraid of death. I haven't by any means gone and bungee jumped and skydove or whatever.
Yeah.
I'm not pushing the limits like that. But ever since then, I haven't been afraid to.
When it's your time, it's your time. And you've accepted that.
Exactly.
So when we started this conversation, you said, you know, we only get one go around, right? Mm-hmm. We only get one chance at this. Mm-hmm. And when our time is up, our time is up. And you think about mortality and you think about, you know, I should have spent more time with this, or I should have done that, or I'm satisfied with what I did. Now that you've gotten at least through this part of this experience, because by no stretch of the imagination is it's over, mm-hmm. that it's over. Where are you in? Are there things that you're like, this is like a second chance in life, and I'm going to do this now, or I'm going to try this, or I'm going to, you know, I guess what I'm trying to say is, do you have a different outlook on life or in certain aspects of your life that you feel now that you've been through this experience that you're like, it doesn't matter anymore. Now that I've survived this, I need to try this or I need to do this.
No, there isn't. The only thing that I feel is that I'm not gonna stop calling people. I'm not gonna stop inviting people to work out. I'm not gonna stop inviting people to trike with me. If I have to invite new people, that's fine. But I don't have to. There's nothing I have to try. There's nothing I have to. I have a pretty good story.
You're happy and content in your life.
Right. But I'm gonna keep on. I'm gonna keep on exercising. I'm gonna keep on inviting people. I'm gonna keep on doing kickball. I'm gonna keep on doing stuff. I'm gonna keep on doing stuff, and then that's it.
You're gonna keep on doing stuff that you do.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you do.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess that was my next question: is did the doctors advise you that you should stop at least for now? Because you know, for anyone who knows you, they know that you take working out pretty seriously. And mm-hmm. it's not just, you know, jumping jacks and stuff like that. You're doing pull-ups. You're doing planks. You're doing a lot of plyometrics. You're doing a lot of yoga mm-hmm. And Pilates, that kind of stuff, weightlifting. Is there anything that the doctor said, you should probably close the shutters on this for now until we figure out what's wrong with you?
He said for 3 weeks, nothing. And then he said, for 3 months, I won't be able to drive a car, which is fine.
Why? Is it like a...
It's what they give people.
Okay.
Like when people have seizures or people have a stroke, they'll give them that amount of time. But it's fine. I live downtown, so. But as far as like exercising, that really, that really stung. Like,
yeah, because that is a huge part of your life.
Yeah.
To the point where, and for anyone who, and this is not me saying this because I'm one of those people, certainly not right now, but when you get to a point where you're exercising daily, when that's taken away from you, or you miss a day, it really throws a wrench in there.
Yeah. And so I'll do whatever they say, as far as taking my time. I'm not gonna be like, well, I feel better, whatever. It is what it is. I'll get back to it. I know that I have to get back to eating right, because this last week, hasn't even been a whole week, has really put a damper on me as far as eating is concerned. I haven't had three meals a day until probably Thursday.
Which was 2 days ago.
Yeah. Today I haven't had that much to eat as well. So I need to get back on that, because I know that I'm losing. I've lost a lot of weight. I've lost a lot of weight in the past month, in the past week. So, yeah.
Well, I have to believe some of that is because you have been without water.
Yeah.
And also just basic nutrients.
I told the girl at the hospital, listen, I'm used to having at least 72 ounces of water a day. And that doesn't count my coconut milk. That doesn't count my whatever.
Right. That's just water.
And I said, I've had maybe 20 today. And she was like, oh, you need to say something. And I was like, there should be a picture here.
Yeah.
There should be something.
And why should you have to say something?
I don't know.
Water is like one of the basic foundations of everyday life.
Yeah.
And here's a guy who comes into the hospital and tells the hospital, hey, I'm dehydrated. I got all this going on. I've vomited 7 times before I even got here.
Yeah.
I've vomited since I got here. I haven't eaten anything. Anything I have ingested has come back up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the tip of a toothbrush is not enough to sustain me. I need nutrients. I need sustenance. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
Jesus. Like I said earlier, I expected this to be a very different conversation.
I know.
I thought we were just gonna shoot the shit and make jokes and talk about movies and music and you know, whatever nonsense.
But sometimes life is funny, and sometimes life isn't. And sometimes life isn't funny, but it is. You know what I'm saying?
You can find the laughter in anything, really, even if it's not supposed to be funny.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, and again, this isn't about me, and I know that you weren't in your right mind, but I'm going to say this anyway, and probably speak for anyone that knows you that's listening to this right now. You can call me at any time, whether you think something's wrong with you or not.
Mm-hmm.
I will never not answer. Or if you call me and I can't answer, I'll text you and say, hey, I'm busy, or I can't talk right now. I feel, and again, I don't mean this I'm not trying to play the victim here. I feel awful that my friend had this happen to him and I wasn't here, or I wasn't the person he called. And I know that wasn't I picked this person because I like them better than you or anything like that. Mm-hmm. And I know that, you know, obviously you were going through the phone, you're just trying to get someone.
You're right.
But I feel, I feel awful, because not that I could have changed anything, not that what happened could have been reversed, but like just that sense of my friend was in a bad situation and had no idea.
Don't ever feel that way, because I'm not going to tell you how to feel, but I will tell you this. I got to the J's I don't remember C through G.
Yeah, and that's 10 letters into the alphabet.
You know what I'm saying? I could have called you. I could have left a message. I could have texted you. I could have
Any person.
Anybody. Yeah. Anybody. But
you were just trying to survive. You were just trying to get through the ordeal. Yeah. So maybe it's a situation where in your phone you put something at the top of your address book that says, you know, in case of emergency or something like that, so that you don't have to go through the situation anymore, because, man, that's scary.
Yeah.
That's scary. Yeah. And I look across the table, and despite the fact that you've lost weight because of the medical ordeal, I'm looking at a person who is in incredible shape,
mm-hmm.
Eats right, takes care of themselves, takes care of their body, takes care of their mind. And then I think about myself and I'm like, I'm the opposite of that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm only 7 years younger than you.
Mm.
And I'm like, the shit, that should be me.
Mm.
I have diabetes. That should be me.
Mm-hmm.
I don't eat right. That should be me.
Mm-hmm.
That scares the hell out of me. And maybe your situation is enough to shake me and others out of their apathy.
It doesn't have to be you.
But I hope that anyone that's out there listening, just sort of a call back to what you said before, call people,
mm-hmm.
talk to people,
mm-hmm.
you know, visit with people, the people that matter to you.
Yeah.
I don't even know what to say anymore, except mm-hmm. that I'm glad you're okay.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that the situation isn't over by any means, because this now has to be looked at and you have to go through procedures and medical things and stuff like that. But I'm glad you're okay.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm glad that you had the presence of mind to survive and do things that most people would have just been like, nah, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad that your wife is coming home and not finding you in the bathroom.
Yeah.
Or on the couch or on the floor or mm-hmm. at the bottom of the stairs.
Mm-hmm.
She's coming home and she's going to give you a big hug.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's the happy ending of this story.
Mm-hmm.
Is that you survived, and your wife, and to survive to tell the story, and your wife gets to come home and appreciate the fact that you're still here.
Yep.
And Joey, I don't even think that I know who you are. And if you are listening, a big shout out to you to coming over here in an instant and taking him to the hospital and understanding that this was an emergency. This wasn't like a, hey, okay, you look fine, I'm going to go. Mm-hmm. You're probably just, you know, maybe you ate some bad fish and then left.
Mm-hmm.
It can't be overstated that somebody who was probably just having a normal day.
He was.
You know, and you called him, what, 7 in the morning?
It was early.
Didn't use the time of the day as an excuse or what was going on as an excuse. He came over here and said, what can I do? Mm-hmm. What's wrong? Where, you know, I'll take you to the hospital right now. That's a friend.
Yeah.
That's family. That's not the guy who comes over here for, you know, a piece of chicken and leaves mm-hmm. or asks you for $5 and then disappears for a year. That's the very definition of family and friend. And so Joey, shout out to you for saving a life, really. Mm-hmm. I mean, let's be honest, if he didn't come through, we probably wouldn't be having this conversation right now. And man, I this makes me incredibly sad, but also incredibly grateful that you are still here
mm-hmm.
and that you're alive to tell the story. And I know you don't tell people how to live their lives. It's never been you, certainly never been me. But for anyone who is listening out there, what would you say to them now that you've been through this experience? What would you say, in sort of in a sense of like, if you could give them any bit of wisdom?
I think that the wisdom I'd give, it's not even really smart. It's not wise. It's an hour. It's an hour. So if somebody calls and says, "Hey, do you want to ride?" I got an hour. It's an hour. So everybody has an hour in their day. I don't care if you, whatever. I don't care if you're working 25, 8 days a week. You have an hour to give to somebody, because that hour either changed your life or changes the life of someone else. So.
And you can't say it any better than that. Obviously, this music that's playing right now, appropriately enough, was done by the man sitting across from me who just told us this life-altering story over the last hour and a half. Thank you for listening to this episode. And just one more thing. Remember that time is something that we never get to get back. And like he said, it's just an hour. That's it. See you next time, everybody.